Chapter 6. Next day, the landscape had changed. It rose clearly out of the soft morning mist. Graeber was now sitting by the window, his face pressed against the pane. He saw fallow land and fields still flecked with snow, under which the even black furrows of the plow were visible, and the pale green shimmer of the young rye. No shell holes, no destruction. Flat, smooth plains. No trenches, no dugouts. Country. Then came the first village. A church on which a cross gleamed. A schoolhouse on whose roof a weather vane was slowly turning. A tavern in front of which people were standing. The open doors of houses, maids with brooms, a wagon. The first reflection of the sun in unbroken windows. Roofs that were whole, undamaged houses. Trees that had all their branches, streets that were streets, and children on their way to school. Graeber had not seen any children in a long time. He took a deep breath. This was what he had been waiting for. It was there. There, after all.
Looks different already, doesn't it? Said a non-com at the other window.
Entirely different. The mist lifted more and more. Woods approached from the horizon. One could see a long way. Telegraph wires accompanied the train. They swooped up and down, lines and staves of an endless, inaudible melody. Birds fluttered up from them like songs. The landscape was still. The rumbling of the front had sunk far behind. No more airplanes. It seemed to Graeber as though he had been on his way for weeks. Even the memory of his comrades was suddenly pale.
What's today? He asked. Thursday.
So it's Thursday?
Of course. Yesterday was Wednesday. Do you think there's any chance we'll get coffee somewhere?
Of course. Here, everything's the way it used to be. A few of the men got bread out of their knapsacks and began to munch it. Graeber waited. He wanted to have his bread with the coffee. He thought of the breakfast table at home. His mother had a blue and white checkered tablecloth, and there had been honey and rolls and coffee with hot milk. The canary had sung, and in summer the sun had shone upon the rose geraniums in the window. At that time he had often rubbed the dark green leaves between his hands, smelling the strong foreign perfume and thinking of foreign lands. Since then, he had seen plenty of foreign lands, but not the way he had dreamed of at that time. He looked out again. Suddenly he felt comforted. Outside stood field hands looking at the train. Women were there, too, with kerchiefs around their heads. The non-com lowered his window and waved. No one waved back.
Well then don't, you louts,
the non-com said in disappointment. A few minutes later came another field with people in it, and he waved again. This time he leaned far out of the window. This time, too, no one waved back, although the people had straightened up and were looking at the train.
That's what we're fighting for now, declared the non-com angrily.
Perhaps they're prisoners who are working there, or foreign laborers.
There were enough women among them. They at least could have waved.
Perhaps they were Russians, too, or Poles.
Nonsense. They didn't look like that. And even so, there must have been some Germans, too. This is a train with wounded, said the bald head. No one waves at them.
Oxen, declared the non-com, closing the subject. Village idiots and milkmaids.
He put up the window with a jerk. In Cologne, they're different, said the locksmith. The train rolled on. Once it stopped in a tunnel for 2 hours. There was no light in the cars, and the tunnel itself was entirely dark. They were accustomed to living underground. Nevertheless, after a time, the tunnel became oppressive. They smoked. The glowing tips of their cigarettes darted up and down like fireflies.
Probably a mechanical failure, said the non-com.
They listened. They could not hear any airplanes, nor were there any sounds of explosions.
Were any of you ever in Rotenburg?
Asked the man from Cologne.
It's an ancient city, Graeber said.
Were you there?
No. Haven't you ever been there?
No. And what can I possibly do there?
You should have gone to Berlin, said the mouse. You only get leave once, and there's more going on in Berlin.
I haven't enough money for Berlin. Where would I stay? In a hotel? I want to get to my family.
The train jerked into motion. Finally, said the bass. I thought we were going to be buried here.
Light trickled grayly into the gloom. It became more silvery, and then the landscape was there again. It seemed more precious than ever. They all crowded to the windows. The afternoon was like wine. Involuntarily, they looked for fresh bomb craters. They found none. A few stations farther on, the bass got out, then the non-com and two others. An hour later, Graeber began to recognize the countryside. Twilight was beginning. Blue veils hung in the trees. It was not any definite object that he recognized, no houses or villages or hills. It was the landscape itself that suddenly spoke. It came from all sides, sweet, overwhelming, and full of sudden memories. It was not precise. It had nothing to do with facts. It was hardly more than the presentiment of return, not return itself. But for that very reason, it was much stronger. The twilight lanes of dreams were in it, and they had no end. The names of the stations were now familiar, places remembered from excursions slipped by. In his memory, there was suddenly the smell of strawberries and resin and of the heath in the sun. It could only be a few minutes now till the city came. Graeber had strapped up his things. He stood up and waited for the first streets. The train stopped. People hurried about outside. Graeber peered out. He heard the name of the city.
Well, good luck,
said the man from Cologne.
We're not there yet. The station's in the middle of town.
Perhaps they've moved it. Better ask.
Graeber opened the door. In the half-darkness, he saw people getting in.
Is this Verden?
He asked. A couple of people glanced up but did not reply. They were in too much of a hurry. He got out. Then he heard the station master shout, Verden! All out for Verden! He seized the straps of his knapsack and forced his way through to the official.
Doesn't this train go to the station?
The man eyed him wearily.
Do you want to go to Verden?
Yes.
Over there to the right, behind the platform. The bus goes the rest of the way.
Graeber walked along the platform. He was unfamiliar with it. It was new and made of green lumber. He found the bus.
Do you go to Verden?
He asked the driver.
Yes.
Doesn't the train go through to the city anymore?
No.
Why not?
Because it only goes this far.
Graeber looked at the driver. He saw it was pointless to go on questioning him. He would get no real answer. He climbed into the bus. There was a vacant seat in one corner. Outside, everything was dark now. He could only just make out what seemed to be new rails shimmering in the darkness. They led off at right angles to the direction of the city. The train was already being switched. Graeber squeezed himself into his corner. Perhaps they have just done it as a precaution, he thought without conviction. The bus drove off. It was an old crate with bad gasoline. The engine coughed. Several Mercedes cars overtook them. In one seat, army officers. In two others, officers of the SS. The people in the bus watched them race by. They said nothing. Hardly anything was said during the drive. Only a child laughed and played in the aisle. A girl of about two, blonde, with a blue ribbon in her hair. Graeber saw the first streets. They were undamaged. He sighed with relief. The bus rattled on for a few minutes and then stopped.
All out!
Where are we?
Graeber asked the man next to him.
Bramsestrasse.
Don't we go any farther?
No.
The man got out. Graeber followed him.
I'm on furlough, he said. For the first time in 2 years.
He had to tell someone. The man looked at him. He had a fresh scar on his forehead and two of his front teeth were missing.
Where do you live?
Number 18, Hakenstrasse.
Is that in the old city?
On the edge, corner of Luisenstrasse. You can see the Katharinenkirche from there.
Yes.
The man stared up into the dark sky.
Well, you know the way.
Certainly. That's something you don't forget.
Certainly not. Good luck.
Thanks.
Greber walked along Bramscherstrasse. He looked at the houses. They were whole. He looked at the windows. They were all dark. Air raid precaution, he thought. Of course. It was childish, but nevertheless he had not expected it. He had thought the city would be lighted. He ought to have remembered from last time. Quickly he walked along the street. He saw a baker's shop in which there was no bread. In the window a couple of paper roses stood in a glass vase. A fancy grocery store came next. The display window was full of packages, but there were empty containers. Then a saddler's window. Greber remembered the store. A stuffed brown horse used to stand there. He glanced in. The horse was still standing there, and in front of him, his head raised to bark, the old stuffed black and white terrier, too, just as before. He stopped a moment before the window, which was unchanged in spite of all that had happened in recent years. Then he walked on. Suddenly he felt at home. "Good evening," he said to someone he did not know who was standing in a nearby doorway.
"Evening," the man said after a while in surprise behind him.
The pavement resounded under Graeber's boots. Soon he would get rid of this heavy foot gear and put on his light civilian shoes. He would take a bath in clear, hot water and put on a clean shirt. He walked faster. The street seemed to spring upward beneath his feet, as though it were alive or filled with electricity. Then suddenly he smelled the smoke. He stopped. It was not chimney smoke, nor the smoke of a wood fire. It was the smell of a conflagration. He looked around. The houses stood there undamaged. The roofs were not burned. The sky behind them was dark blue and vast. He walked on. The street ended in a little square with flower beds. The smell of burning grew stronger. It seemed to hang in the bare treetops. Graeber sniffed. He could not determine where it came from. Now it was everywhere, as though it had fallen from the sky like ashes. At the next corner, he saw the first ruined house. It gave him a start. He had seen nothing but ruins in recent years and never thought anything about it. But he stared at this pile of rubble as though he were seeing a ruined building for the first time in his life. "It's just a single house," he thought. "Only a single one. The others are all still standing." He hastened past the pile of rubble, sniffing. The smell of burning was not coming from it. This house had been destroyed quite a long time ago. Perhaps it had been an accident, a forgotten bomb that had been released at random on the flight home. He looked for the name of the street. Bremerstrasse. It was still a long walk to Hockenstrasse. Still at least a half hour's walk. He went faster. He saw hardly anyone. Under a dark archway, some blue electric bulbs were burning. They were shaded, and they made the arch look as though it had tuberculosis. Then came the first ruined corner. This time there were several houses. Only the foundation walls were still standing. They rose into the air, jagged and black. Bent girders hung between like dark snakes that had crawled out of the stones. Part of the rubble had been shoveled to one side. These ruins, too, were old. Graeber went close by them. He clambered over the rubble on the sidewalk and in the darkness saw darker shadows like giant beetles creeping about. "Hello?" he shouted. "Is anyone there?" Mortar crumbled and stones clattered. The figures slid away. Graeber heard heavy breathing. He listened, then realized that it was he himself who was breathing so loud. Now he was running. The smell of the fire grew more intense. The destruction increased. Then he came to the old city and stopped and stared and stared. Rows of wooden houses from the Middle Ages had stood there before, with their projecting gables, painted roofs, and bright-colored legends. They were not there anymore. In their place, he saw the chaotic aftermath of a Holocaust. Charred beams, foundation walls, heaps of stone, remnants of pavement, and over it, a billowing whitish mist. The houses had burned like dry chips. He ran on. Wild fear had suddenly seized him. He had remembered that not far from his parents' house there was a small copper works. That might have been a target. He blundered on along the street as fast as he could, over smoldering heaps of damp ruins. He bumped into people. He ran forward. He climbed over piles of rubble, and then he stopped. He no longer knew where he was. The city that he had known since childhood was so changed that he could no longer find his way. He was used to orienting himself by the house fronts. They were no longer there. He asked a woman who was stealing by how he could get to Hakenstrasse. "What?" she asked, terrified. She was dirty and held her hands in front of her breast. "To Hakenstrasse," the woman motioned. "There, over there, around the corner." He went that way. Charred trees stood on one side. Their twigs and smaller branches had been burned away. The stumps and a few of the main branches still rose into the air. They looked like immense black hands stretched up out of the earth toward the sky. Graeber tried to get his bearings. From here, he should have been able to see the spire of Katharinenkirche. He did not see it. Perhaps the church, too, had been destroyed. He did not ask anyone else. Somewhere he saw stretchers standing. People were digging. Firemen were running about. Water splashed through dense smoke. A dull glow hung over the copperworks. Then he found Hakenstrasse.